So, welcome everyone in real life. One, two, three, four, five, six in the Gompa and 17 online. Fantastic. Let's adjust our posture and then adjust our mind. So, for the posture, a nice two-point posture of straightening the spine, putting some effort into keeping your back straight, and then relaxing the body. Like tuning a stringed instrument, not too tight and not too loose. And in particular, imagine a thread of light that runs from the base of your spine, just in front of your spine, up through your body, exiting the crown of your head. And feel as if this thread of light is suspending you, and all the weight of your body is supported, suspended in this way from your crown. So let your posture naturally align. And once your spine is straight, then relaxing your body, becoming present in the room where you are, letting go of all the busyness of the day, recalling the purpose of our life, where we're so often lost in the details. So, again, becoming aware of the purpose of our life. And just a short motivation from His Holiness the Dalai Lama. With the wish to free all beings, I shall always go for refuge to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha until I reach full enlightenment. Inspired by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, I generate the mind of full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. As long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, until then, may we too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Okay, so with our motivation adjusted, people here in the room, how have you been going? Are there any questions or comments or anything from the last couple of weeks of practice? Been a bit busy, a bit busy in a good way, I hear. And yes, the big initiations up at Chenrezig Institute seem to have been just extraordinary and galvanized all of Southeast Queensland into practice and really lifted everyone's mind. I must admit, I've only just been getting into the flow of saying my mantras and figuring out how to say the mantras and how to get it going throughout the day as well, filling in the spaces. And it all hinged on a very technical thing, which was to just make sure that I had my little counter in my pocket. Because I've only been counting the mantras that I'm actually counting. So I tried your method, Ian, of counting on my fingers. And that's okay up to about 15. And then it's like, was that 15 or was that 20? And then I'm like, no idea. So then, and also because having my mala out in the bus, no, I don't feel very confident about that either. Oh, a phone app. Ah, there is a phone app called Just Counter. Now that could be good. So you can close it, use the volume control, boom, 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 fantastic. And then everyone just thinks you're like everyone else on the bus on their phone. Yeah, so I've got to say, I just really feel like a laggard with this. And but at least I've stopped falling asleep in the middle of doing my prayers at the end of the day. So that's a plus. That's slowly getting there. I was also talking to Scott earlier today about how we are actually really purifying, and so purification will come up. And even like doing the initiations and things, just sitting in the Gompa and having all of the craziness arise in your mind, all of that, you know, the emotions, the totally unjustified frustration that may come upon you when you're sitting in a beatific place like a Gompa, and suddenly all of this negativity starts arising in your mind. It's like, what? So ashamed. Gosh, I hope the Lama can't hear me, can't hear my mind. But all of that I feel is like the more subtle, starting from the course and getting more subtle negativity is actually bubbling up, like in that visualization of you're being filled with the nectar, and then all this stuff, it comes to awareness. And as long as we don't run with it and think it's true and think everyone around me really is annoying, then it just can be come up and out and we can release it. So I'm kind of saying that because if anybody had had a difficult part of the initiations, to not feel like something went wrong, that that's actually really part of the process.
Kerry's got a question about doing SOG. If doing SOG offering from home without doing Guru Puja from the retreat book, do I make meat and tea instead of alcohol for inner and outer offerings, or just food, example, rice, biscuits, etc.?
What a tangle is that of a
Yes.
question, but at
Also, the
least you're asking
Vajra slanted, pointed bit, does that point up or down?
Okay, with a Vajra, there is a blunt end and a pointy bit, and the pointy bit goes at the top. And when you put it down on the table, the pointy bit points away from you. And if you can't tell what's the pointy bit and what's the blunt bit, you can tie a little bit of red thread to one end inside the Vajra and decide that's the pointy end.
That sounds like
But
fun.
okay, so for SOG, we did cover this last time. The SOG offering itself is the specially blessed offerings, and SOG offerings are supposed to be huge and multiple. And Venerable Rabbina has actually said that it's really nice if they can all be like pink and fluffy. So lots of sweets and all sorts, just really delicate, white and red and pink and really like really over the top French pastry style offerings. Something that's really opulent and beautiful and as much as possible. So that's the offerings, and what makes them SOG, this specially blessed offering, is by arising as the deity and blessing them. So they transform through samadhi, concentration, mantra, and mudra. And so then they become made of light in the nature of emptiness and completely pure and filling all of space. And then you offer them. So it's the feast of the Dakas and Dakinis, the feast of seeing everybody, yourself, and all the beings in the world as Vajrasattva, and then offering this. Normally, we do tsog. When we do Guru Puja, we wouldn't do Guru Puja without SOG unless you're doing Guru Puja every single day, and then maybe. But generally, when we have Guru Puja, the two go together. So for years and years and years, I thought they were the one thing, but they're not. And that's why the SOG bit is at the back of the book, because it's a distinct practice itself. But also, there is the Haruka Vajrasattva SOG offering, which is much, much shorter. And then there is also a little offering prayer that's just a couple of verses, but nevertheless you still need to bless the offerings. And so for that, then you need to be able to self-generate and bless with the if you can, Bhadra and Bell, and with the inner offering. So that's where the inner offering comes in, and also the tsog, the bala and madana. So the bala and madana, the physical basis, starts off as meat and alcohol, which are supposed to be abhorrent substances. And what we do in the process of blessing them is transform them into bliss and emptiness. So you need meat and alcohol. You can't have tea, juice, cheese, nothing like that, because cheese is not an abhorrent substance, and neither is tea. Meat and alcohol, it represents the really base, convoluted aggregates that we have in the, samsaric aggregates. And through the process of the blessing, the transformation, they're transformed into the rainbow body of a Buddha. So it's got to go from something that normally we avoid to something blissful and, in the nature of emptiness. So for that, you need meat and alcohol.
Do our recitations count if we do them while doing ordinary day-to-day things, or do we need to sit and do a proper session? So there's a few
You need to do
people.
both. So each day you need to sit and do a proper session if you're doing the nondros. And so then any mantras that you are doing out and about, you can count if you're counting them. But what they are is part of that session. So you can't just do mantras out and about and think that's it. You have to do the session, because in the session you take refuge, have the visualization, you have all the purification, you dedicate at the end. So it's got the bookends. And as we go through, we'll do a more involved practice. Yeah, you need to still sit on the cushion and do a bit of practice, and then everything else that you're out and about throughout the day, counting on your little thing, then you can add to the count.
I do my practice at night because it's the last thing before going to sleep.
Yep.
But in the mornings, I do a refuge practice and a few other prayers, not specifically Vajrasattva. So when I then throughout the day do extra Vajrasattvas, are they adding on to last night's? Do I,
You could
like, is that
add them
okay?
onto last night's, or you could be like a bit of a time machine and just do them early for the current night. I would think that you're doing them early for the current night.
Because I've already taken refuge.
Yeah.
Okay, and Francisca's followed up too. So if I sat and did a bit of a session in the morning, then the rest of the day is counting towards the Ngondros. Yes. Mandy said she had a story. I'm not sure if that
Okay.
was a little while back.
Hi everyone. Just thought I might give you a bit of, I don't know how helpful this can be for all of us doing our non-gros, reciting our mantras, but I had a little experience yesterday. I was taking our donations over to New Farm Neighbourhood Centre. Me thinking,
Oh, the Pooja donations.
yeah, the Pooja donations. Me being thinking, being smart, I'll take a shortcut through Cannon Hill, through Morningside, and all through there. Lo and behold, there was an accident further down the road. And as I was going along, I wasn't getting very far. I was getting crankier and crankier. And I thought, hang on a minute, I'm going to do my Vajrasattva recitations. But between the deadlock of all the traffic until I got to New Farm, I had done 110 Vajrasattva long mantras. And I was very calm and I was very happy with myself. So, yeah, if you're just out and about and you have that sort of situation,
Yeah.
just get your mantras happening in your mind and then everything will just pass
And
along
just
quite
get them
nicely,
started.
you know?
So actually, I'm really happy you brought that up because that's the topic for tonight. How Geshe-la basically said that now that we have this empowerment, our character becomes aligned with Vajrasattva's enlightened qualities. And so that means that wherever we are with sentient beings, we become a living source of purification and merit. So while you are calming your own mind, doing those mantras and using the time and instead of getting frustrated, it also benefits everyone around you. So everyone else in gridlock, and of course, the person with the accident. It means that our being in the world now has power and it has a beneficial effect. So thank you, Mandy.
No
Yes, so with
problem.
the, I thought that's what I'd go through and then what those particular empowering activities were. Even though I was a Jenang, and as Bev pointed out, that we did receive the four complete initiations. So the vase initiation of the body, secret initiation of speech, wisdom initiation of mind, and word initiation of activities. So the activities means that it turns all of what would be our ordinary activities into virtuous ones and skillful means of benefiting people. Just by others seeing you, they get purified. Others hearing you, they get purified. Even they remember you, they get purified. Even they remember you with anger, they get purified. So you become a living source of blessings for those around you, family, community, pets. So how many of us have pets who we really adore, who make our life easier? So now we can actually benefit them. Instead of kind of they're living with us, they're using up all their good karma, aren't they? What are we doing for our pets in the big scheme of things? So now we're doing something really important for them. And so if you can say some of the mantras out loud so that they hear them. And if you're self-generated as Vajrasattva, then it benefits the pets. And Geshe-la said, even if you do gardening, if you've got some of you have lovely gardens, all the little worms and the crickets and the this and that, they all benefit as well. It becomes meaningful. And then not only that, you become a source of purification and merit even for your family. Even if your family isn't Buddhist, doesn't believe in karma, thinks you're kind of weird, it's still going to benefit them, your very presence, without them knowing. So that was in general. Then, together with those initiations, so the word initiation, the one to do with activities, means that it is, what did Geshe-la say? The empowering activities And it means the actions that we perform in relation to the character of us as a person. And so we become the character of the deity. So our character is empowered so that whatever way we're defined now as who we are, what our particular name is, it's going to be of a divine characteristic. So everything we do becomes of skillful means. And so, in general, even whatever thoughts that we have, even if they're just about worldly concerns, so as Geshe-la calls that, even if they carry some limitations, because we have the empowering activities blessing, even those thoughts carry purification. So even if we're planning how to cook dinner for the family, that stops being a worldly thing and carries purification, carries the blessings of Vajrasattva. So every interaction in your life, positive or negative. So of course, by doing this practice, we're supposed to become like the result is becoming like the living embodiment of Vajrasattva. So then the four activities of benefiting others, does anyone remember what those four activities are? To do with the fingers, remember? And which finger we hold our mala over? Is it coming back to you? So normally we hold the mala over this top finger, isn't it? Peace, that's right. That's the peaceful activities. Because the four fingers kind of represent the four ways of benefiting others through peaceful means, increasing power or control, and wrath or force, forceful means. So all four activities are a way of benefiting others. So normally when we hold a mala, we usually hold it over this first finger because it's a peaceful activity, pacifying the mind. But so in this Vajrasattva practice, then we hold it over the third finger because it's mostly about controlling the mind, control especially over the desire realm. The purification activities to do with the peaceful activities with Vajrasattva, that's actually all the activities of Vajrasattva. It's purifying, it's pacifying the mind. So that's like the moonlight of Vajrasattva, pacifying the mind, the cooling rays of the moon. So with this, then any purification that we do becomes effective because of the blessings of that, the peaceful activities. The second one, increasing merits, virtues, goodness, all the good things in life. Even if you don't actually get to do the things, but you just aspire to do the good things, it becomes effective. It has a momentum to it. The moment you actually engage in cultivating good things or good activities, your merits increase, your realizations increase. So you get empowered for that, for all the increasing things. So the momentum should really gather. The third one, controlling. So Geshe-la spent a lot more time on this one, the controlling activities, that by this, with this practice and with the blessings of the practice, you gain a deeper ability to manage your emotions and control your states of mind. So the first inkling of this may be that you start noticing your emotions and they start coming up and all the frustration starts coming up, but instead of being run away with it, you're able to do something about it and pacify your mind. Just like what you were saying, Mandy, about instead of getting frustrated in the traffic jam. So it may not be instantaneous or immediate, but your capacity to handle situations will become much stronger than before. And Geshe-la kind of told a little story about saying, it's quite frustrating, isn't it, when people don't get what you mean, they're not listening to what you're saying, and especially after you've said it very, very clearly, and yet they still don't behave according to what you want. And I'm thinking, oh, I wonder what's behind that story. So if you have that experience of people not listening to you, or that your words don't have power, or you, it doesn't matter how clear you are, it still doesn't get across, still people don't cooperate. By doing this practice, that all of that means of the controlling activity should be able to start getting stronger. So with these blessings, then Geshe-la says, with negative doings, you are able to turn them into positive minds. And with positive doings, just by them seeing you, even if you don't speak directly, just by you saying something to them, people start to listen to you, understand you better, and value your guidance. So yes, especially if you have caring roles, children, family, community, what that means is now you become their guide. You become a meaningful guide. So it might freak you out a bit that now you are the guide of your family, but actually we are. We're the designated practitioner of pretty much everybody that we know. As ordinary people, we probably would feel completely freaked out about that and completely, without any credentials. But with the Vajrasattva for empowerment, then you are empowered to be a guide for them. And so Geshe-la said this actually, if we want our relationships to progress, if we want loving relationships or peaceful relationships, then it's through these four activities. And so by being a guide for our nearest and dearest, our friends, then our relationships will evolve in a harmonious way. That all stems from this empowerment. So that's the third one, the controlling, the way of benefiting others. And then the fourth, then he said, sometimes you might need to be very stern. In certain situations, you might need to look a bit tough. And so if that's needed, it can be effective. So instead of having to be tough and frightening or aggressive, you can be tough and it has power to stop the negativity in its tracks. So the moment you frown, he was saying, you just have a little bit of frown appears and everyone's like, whoop, better be very good. Or the moment the tone of your voice changes just a little bit, then people are like, oh, better get going and get it done. So with just even a small change of tone, your voice becomes like thunder, which is a bit different from how we normally go when we try and force people to do what we want. We just raise our voice louder and louder and get aggressive. So this is the opposite of that. It's just by a little tiny bit of sternness, there is power there to benefit others. That was what Geshe-la was saying about four activities. Questions? Comments?
Does it matter which hand?
When we're doing this practice, Vajrasattva Mother Father, it's the left hand. Yes, it matters because it's Mother Tantra. So Mother Tantra practices are the left hand.
And just to be absolutely sure, when you say the third finger, you're actually referring to the ring finger, aren't you?
The ring finger. Yep. Third finger. Four fingers, one thumb. Counting from the top.
Another question here that's not absolutely finger related. What does it mean to come home to the mandala? Is that visual of the mandala house or recal to arise as Vajrasattva and behave according?
It's the operating word there is home. So where is home? The home is in your heart, in your experience. So coming home to Vajrasattva, to the mandala, is returning to that grounding that the practice gives you.
Beautiful.
And if an image helps, then great. But it's really starting from that deep internal feeling of feeling aligned with Vajrasattva. So you become the character of Vajrasattva. All of your ethics, your intentions become aligned with Vajrasattva. What you do becomes aligned. So that's the coming home. Yeah, then of course, there's lots of practices where there is a description of the mandala and all sorts of things like that. That's just to remind us.
What were the four names for the initiation again?
So the vase initiation for the body, secret initiation for speech, wisdom initiation for mind and word initiation for activities. So that is like a generic thing across all highest yoga tantra practices.
One thing that's occurred to me when we do call it the little booklet practice, so you're visualizing the three purifications, the downwards, upwards, and the instantaneous. And then if you're doing extra mantras during the day, is there guidance on a specific visualization for those? Should we also be doing
I
an
think
up down and
you should be letting it organically happen. So I suspect that for the first few months, we're going to be doing mostly downward purification, because we start with the most, we just, it's like with cleaning anything, washing any kind of, washing a cloth or a tea towel or whatever. First, you get the gunk out, the really obvious gunk. And then you rinse it again, and then the water's a bit less, and then you rinse it again and again. So we're starting with the most coarse obvious. So that's all the physical stuff. And it could be not just purifying negative actions that we've done, but also sicknesses and the causes of sicknesses. So I suspect that we're going to naturally focus on that. And just do it until it feels done. Don't stop. And then, because we do a formal practice sometime during the day when we sit there and do our pocket practice, we're going to do all three of those purifications. So we're not going to miss them out. But as the more coarse negativities are flushed out, then the more subtle ones are there. So, speech, it's mostly to do, it's still physical. There's sound, like sound waves are a physical thing, aren't they? But they're subtle physical. And it's much more to do with those inner energies in the body. So you feel all of your energies going, so then upwards, upwards and out. And also, when our emotions start to get agitated, how we become aware of it is that all of that outrage in our mind, all of the huge yelling fits that we're having with people in our mind, that's all of that energy. So that's more like the upward purification. So when that starts happening, do that until you feel it's done, done for the day. You've made some inroads. And so then I'm hoping that after that, we've done the course, we get a little bit more subtle, then to do with the flashes of lightning, that's that instantaneous blissful clarity. So it's like a really intense aha moment. But it's permeated with bliss and it's infinite and it's filled with energy. So, I'm just surmising here because I haven't actually got nearly close to that. That maybe once we start having our instantaneous flashes of lightning coming in and instantaneously illuminating our whole system, then the purification's going to go really deep. So play it by ear.
Oh, thank you. Good answer.
Thank you.
There's a question here from Kerry. Do I arise as Vajrasattva at absorption?
Yes, if you've had the initiation, you can. And then you go through the rest of the day like that. So you're never ordinary. You're no longer Kerry. Sorry. Geshe-la made a joke about that in the practice and said something or other in the commentary. It's like, we've been going through life as our ordinary self, Kerry or Miffy or whatever. We've filled everyone, even the FBI, even ASIO, we've filled them. But no, actually, we are now Vajrasattva. So yes, very good to do that. So we're going to delve into that more depth of the practice in our mini retreats. This one, the practice, the pocketbook that we've been doing is for everybody to do, whether you've had the initiation or not, or any level of the initiation. So it's just a little bit more ambiguous. Okay, well, thank you, everyone.